This is Donald J. Trump. When I'm not talking about stolen elections or how great I am listening to the Philip D. Blackman Show, making America smarter, one show at a time. Enjoy the program.
It's Friday! Listen up. The views and opinions of this radio show and podcast are prepared and provided by Philip D. Blackman in his personal capacity. The opinions expressed in this show are my own, and they do not reflect the view of this radio station, broadcasting platform, or any organization Philip D. Blackman is a member of. The material and information presented in this broadcast is for general information purposes only. Any and all media presented are the property of their respective owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. Let's get started.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Late night feedings, first days, birthdays, and play days. Man time. Mom time. And bedtime. You've been free to be there for them. Let's remember who made that freedom possible.
Hey, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Philip D. Blackman Show. Man, I'm your host, Philip D. Blackman, and welcome to the fastest hour in radio. So if you don't own a calendar anywhere, ladies and gentlemen, if you do own social media, then hey, I'm sure just a quick scroll through your social media feeds, you would have seen that by the vision of everyone changing their changing their profile pictures to their military families or to themselves, some 20 plus years ago, in a lot better shape, doing something a lot better, most likely. And ladies and gentlemen, you probably figured out that today is Veterans Day. The day is the day where veterans across the United States, in unison, man, they change their social media profiles to either their own military picture or that, again, of a family member. But hey, this is their day to recognize them, and it's their own subtle way of letting you know that you are very welcome for their service. So guys, today we're actually going to be talking, we're going to be honoring these veterans with a Veterans Day segment, and then we're actually going to get into the news that is news. We'll be talking about how the political landscape changes after the midterms, and lastly, we're going to cover some local news in the nation that really should be covered, but it's not. But first, friends, hey, right here at the Philip D. Blackman Show, we're live right now on Facebook, right over here on YouTube, and of course, we also have a broadcast running live on LinkedIn. Just type in the keyword Philip D. Blackman Show, and there you'll find it, as well as if you're in the Twitter space or in Twitch, then hey, just type in the PDB Show, guys, and you can also join this show. Now, look, if you want to leave a comment or you want to participate in any way, social media is pretty good options, 409-245-9753. You can write us or you can call us, and we will put your comment up and we will address your comment, your concerns, and whatever you may have. But again, friends, from our listeners all across the airwaves, across the nation, around the globe, thank you so much for joining me for episode number 302, Veterans Day and News. So if you want to join, 409-245-9753. 7753 is the number. All right, so again, so to my viewers who have actually made themselves known, I see the wife's here. Tammy says, happy Friday, friends. Casey Starkey, happy Veterans Day to all past and present future warfighters. Well, all through the future in there for him. Roxanne Kirby says, happy Veterans Day, Philip. Hey, thank you so much. Not everybody gets the privilege, and I'm privileged to be a part of that select few. So, guys, every show that I've been doing since the assault on our police force, we recognized that they wasn't getting the treatment that they deserved. They deserved much better than they were getting. And so what Tammy and I sat down to do, and we created a segment that we originally called Back the Blue. And the idea was we wanted to try to find a good way to honor our law enforcement community. But then we got to thinking, man, there's just no way, that's too big of a scope. So let's be more specific and let's talk about these men and women who've given their lives in service to their country and their community. So we did, and we called that segment End of Watch. Now, it's kind of one of the things in the military or in the police departments, you know, you'll hear about that End of Watch is in. We, you know, we've got the watch from here until Valhalla, however they may characterize their tribute. But one thing that we do know, last year in 2021, we had 650 officers die in the line of duty. And as of this show, we've lost 196. Now, guys, we get all of our information off the Officer Down Memorial page. That is where we get our information. So, man, go check out some of those stories, ODMP. And just look at the ages, look at the faces, and read some of the stories of how these heroes truly gave their life. You know, we agree, and if you go to that website, you'll see a quote that says that when a police officer is killed, it's not just an agency that loses an officer, it's an entire nation. And we can't get behind a statement any more than that, because we honor all of our officers who serve, and those especially who've given their life in service of their community. And we highlight a different officer every week, beginning with the Monday show. Now, this week, friends, we're going to continue honoring our second officer of the year from the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, Officer Trung Tai, in this opening segment, End of Watch.
The Philip D. Blackman Show proudly salutes Officer Trung Tai, 49, of the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department in Nevada, who was shot and killed on October 13, 2022, while responding to a domestic disturbance call. Officer Tai served his department with honor for 23 years. His father, Quang Tai, said of his son, "He was a pillar in the community. He had a phenomenal moral compass. He felt it was his duty and obligation. Everything he did, he put his heart and soul into." Officer Tai is survived by his father and daughter. On behalf of the Philip D. Blackman Show and a grateful nation, thank you for your service, Officer Tai. Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Officer Trung Tai, End of Watch, October 13th, 2022. Rest in peace, sir.
To all of our veterans, thank you for our service. Happy Veterans Day. God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her night with a light from above, through the mountains, through the prairies, through the oceans, while we fall. God bless America, my home, sweet home. God bless America,
you know, Look, I didn't put that on there because I thought that she could sing. I mean, I think what I appreciated about it is, man, this is a little human who recognizes the country she lives in. And you know what? She may not be able to sing worth a damn as far as carrying a tune for some of your likings, but I'm kind of with Casey Starkey, right? The best version ever heard, and I think the reason why is, man, that is... That little girl was giving you everything she could because she, man, it's almost like she believes in what she's saying. And that's why we wanted to start it, because that is kind of the idea and what we should be doing. With all the political discourse and everything going on, this is the time of the year, ladies and gentlemen, where we're supposed to take a step back and look at the people who have truly made a difference, who've made an impact in the building of this country. Now, the history books, if you know, went back when I was in school, when they taught history, they told us that November the 11th, 1919 is when President Woodrow Wilson addressed the nation with these words. And he said that a year ago today, our enemies laid down their arms in accordance with an armistice, which rendered them impotent to renew hostilities and gave the world an assured opportunity to reconstruct its shattered order and to work out in peace a new and more set of international relations. He said that the soldiers and people of the European allies have fought and have endured more than 4 years to uphold the barrier of the civilization against the aggressions of an armed force, end quote. Now, the armistice that the president was referring to, it brought an end to World War I, which, you know, back then it was properly referred to as the war to end all wars. Well, I guess not. You know, it took until June 4th of 1926 for Congress to actually jump in and adopt resolution requesting Calvin Coolidge, then the president, to issue annual proclamations every year calling for the observance of November the 11th with appropriate ceremonies. Now, ironically, a congressional act making November 11 of each year a legal holiday to be dedicated to the cause of world peace and thereafter celebrated as known as Armistice Day was finally approved May the 13th of 1938, just as Adolf Hitler was laying his infamous groundwork that would lead us into World War II. The idea for us to expand Armistice Day to celebrate all veterans, not just those who've paid the ultimate price for their lives, they came from Raymond Weeks. He was a World War II veteran from Alabama, and President Eisenhower, he agreed, and he signed into law May 26th of 54, and Congress amended the bill June 1st of 54 as well, replacing Armistice with veterans, establishing this thing we have today called Veterans Day as our national holiday. Now, 14 years later, 1968, Congress passed the Uniform Monday Holiday Bill, which moved various federal holidays onto Mondays to ensure that workers would actually receive the guaranteed number of long weekends every year. And under these new rules, Veterans Day was briefly moved to the fourth Monday in October, but 1975 was changed back to the original date. President Gerald Ford, he argued that the historical importance of the date, 11 November, was of a greater significance. And now the holiday is used to pay respect to all those veterans who have served during any war for the United States. But it's not just any war. It's veterans who served in times of peace as well. We can't forget that. We got to understand that the Veterans Day, it's not about your combat veterans. Now, in its own right, I guess you could make the argument either way, but I'm going to make the argument as a veteran that, you know, Veterans Day is for all veterans, peacetime and wartime, because at the end of the day, man, they all signed up for the same possibility that I did. You know, the likelihood by joining as a war's kicking off of going to war, you know that's going to happen, but it's those surprise moments that right after 9/11, a lot of those warriors were probably on their way out of the military. We declared war. They did a lockdown. They did a stop loss. And so there were a lot of people who went to war and they didn't want to because the war just happened to fall in when they were leaving. But at any rate, Veterans Day is for all veterans who have honorably served. Now, notice I said the key word honorably, right? The honorable service people. The folks who made it, went through basic training, they were an attitude or a discipline problem, and they got out on a dishonorable discharge or however they got out of the military on anything other than an honorable discharge, that says that they are not worthy of that recognition. Because remember, the good we do is never remembered, the bad is never forgotten. So the argument is, Nobody cares how you run your race. They care about how you finish that race. And if you finish that race like a turd, then go sit down with the rest. But November the 11th, it's the number that we use to celebrate. The number keeps raising. The number of veterans keeps raising every November the 11th. You know, there was the Korean conflict, 1950 to 1953. We had the Vietnam War from 64 to 75. We had the war in Afghanistan from 2001 to 2021. The Iraq invasion in 2003, which we still have people there. Ukraine, Mogadishu, Kosovo. You know, according to U.S. officials, there's currently about 900 American soldiers who are deployed right now in Syria, and they're getting advice, they're giving advice, and they're providing support for the local forces there. Now, there's also reports of U.S. intelligence and other support inside Ukraine. That they're very persistent, but it's unconfirmed because they don't want us to know. But over time, wars have invariably led to follow-up conflicts between former losers and former winners. Military manpower, weapons, no matter how advanced, they've never provided a permanent solution to human conflicts. But that's what we tend to go to. You know, they just increased the number of celebrants, the veterans of November 11. You know, the first veterans of the United States, they served during the American Revolution, the Continental Army. You know, and they were created in 1975 when colonial militias, they formed a common enemy under the command of George Washington. And since then, the United States has declared a war 11 times. They fought conflicts around the world. More than 41 million American veterans have served under the course of our nation's history. More than 16 million Americans did so just in World War II alone. But who are American veterans? You know, American veterans, they don't have a nomenclature. You can't look at them and say, that's a veteran. Your stocker at your local grocery store that you treat like shit because they won't go get you the fresh yams, that could be a veteran. Your drive-through worker, your waiter or your waitress, your bank teller, your real estate broker, they could be a veteran. Your police officers, your fire department, a lot of your first responders, not just police and fire, but you know your EMS, your doctors, your nurses, veterans. Veterans come in all walks of life. Veterans come in all shapes and all sizes and all colors and all creeds and all sexual orientations. You know, throughout our history, they've included the Green Mountain Boys. They've included the Buffalo Soldiers and the Tuskegee Airmen, the Women Air Force Service Pilots, the Screaming Eagles, the Green Berets, the All-Americans. They're the men and women who served their country at home and abroad, land, sea, and air since 1973. They've served as an all-volunteer force. Roughly 18 million veterans, they're living in the United States today. And they served during these times of war, the Gulf War, Vietnam era, times of peace from 55 to 64 and 75 to 90. The largest single group of veterans we have right now is the ones we did the greatest disservice to. We have 6.4 million Vietnam veterans right now. And a lot of them still have yet to receive their welcome home. You know, the fastest declining group of veterans as of right now in our society is World War II. These are called the greatest generation. These are the people who are all on their way out. The best reflection of what our nation should be. Between 2000 and 2018, the number of living World War II veterans in the United States had declined from 5.7 million to now we're at 500,000. And by the year 2030, it's projected that there's going to be fewer than 8,000 World War II veterans in the world. But I argue that unless you are a veteran of foreign wars, you know, it's not really possible to ever fully understand the mental suffering that's been experienced by our soldiers on the battlefield and in foreign lands. This is not a takeaway from our peacetime troops. But since mental health is kind of a cornerstone of this program, of the Philip D. Blackman Show, that's why I'm bringing it up. You know, the next bullet it may be the end of their life. For soldiers who, you know, as a rule, they're just now starting their lives around 18 years old. And in other cases, bullets are very cruel. They're dreadful messengers of future life filled with very painful and debilitating injuries. Soldiers injured in war, they experienced more than just a nightmare of extremely painful suffering. They lack the help and the relief programs that are provided, that are supposed to be provided by physicians and nurses and technicians and families and friends and even ministers. Their only hope, then, I guess, suppose if you look at our mental health or our veteran population, lies in medics and morphine, especially downrange. But, you know, the medics and the morphine, the pain pills, you know, they're not always available due to the fact that medics, sometimes they become victims of the enemy attacks themselves, especially when they were in service to their country. You know, the psychological suffering, it compounds the physical pain of an injured soldier who realizes that really there's just very little hope returning alive to his beloved America, to his family, and to his friends. And wounded soldiers, specifically, they quite often find themselves being accompanied by and understood by their wounded peers. Some share the same or worse pains and agony. Most of them try not to quantify, but they do. And others, they're already silenced by death. You know, our soldiers, they add to the heavy load of suffering. Sometimes they face the irresponsible, the cruel, the selfish, non-patriotic criticisms of well-known American celebrities who are denouncing our soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, guardians as killers of civilians during a war. You know, it's those comments that actually destroy the morale of our soldiers and add to their unbearable suffering. I know it firsthand because I got to see it. I got to see it when I was in Iraq, watching the TV, the news back home and seeing, you know, in my head, I'm fighting for my country, but on the TV, I'm seeing my own countrymen protest me and my brothers and sisters as if we had a choice. Every war that's ever been fought, it carries the unfortunate price of civilian death and injuries, which is why I don't understand why there's so many people who call for war all the time. Your family's lives, they're impacted by the sacrifice of our soldiers. And it's been shown a few quotes which summarize very long years of talking to soldiers, their wives, and their daughters. When they say that on Veterans Day, it's most painful not to be able to take flowers to my husband's graveyard. There is no graveyard. They're missing in action. No remains found. There's still families out there. That is their mantra. Yeah, a lot of people shared that, you know, on Veterans Day, they recall their many years of childhood not having a father or mother to share a holiday with, like Thanksgiving or Hanukkah or Christmas or birthdays, help them do their homework or go with them to ball games or even take them down the aisle or the altar after their wedding day or to go hunting or to go fishing. Today, the sacrifices of our veterans and their families, today, we enjoy a free America that's been entrusted by God Almighty to be the lighthouse of hope, just for human rights alone, for the whole world. I'm not going to say it's necessary for you to go out there and find you a veteran just so you can tackle them down and thank them for their service, because I'm going to tell you, some veterans, they've accepted, hey, that's just part of the role. Other veterans, they get really, they don't know how to answer that. They don't know how to respond to that, and they just assume that no one knows they're a veteran. But I think the lesson that I'm trying to reach is because you never know who is a veteran. If you truly love your country, if you truly love your service members. Now, look, just because you're a veteran doesn't give you a pass to be an asshole. But the way that you always would treat a veteran when you recognize that they are a veteran should be how you treat everyone across the board, whether you know their status or not, just on the off chance that, you know what, they might be a veteran. For a nation that hails our heroes, that hails our veterans as heroes, that sets aside a day to recognize those who have fallen in combat, you think that we'd be a nation that would treat each other better. So my hope for you, ladies and gentlemen, is if you did go out and you did go get your free meal on Veterans Day, I hope you enjoyed it. Your sacrifices have definitely earned it. For those of you who maybe bought a veteran a meal, who found a veteran and thanked them. Maybe who, if you're a veteran yourself, you went and got your meal and you found a homeless one and you gave it away, keeping that love and brotherhood. To everyone who I mocked earlier, who changed all their profile pictures showing their military service, you're welcome for my service, right? you know, to all of you guys, be proud that you served. And I'm proud that you're proud, and I'm proud that you let people know every year around this time that, hey, you know what? Everything aside, you still signed up. That's something no one can ever take from you. No matter what it is, you still signed up and you still served honorably. And if you're part of that community, thank you so much for your service. Thank you so much for your dedication. And thank you, if you're much older than I, thank you for paving the way for warfighters like me. Now, before we get to this show, guys, I want to wrap up this Veterans Day tribute the best way that I can think of. I'm sure it's going to get flagged for copyright infringement, but I don't care. I can give this day a wash. But to all of you guys who are veterans, for your family members who, or if you're a family member of a veteran, thank you all for your service. Because I'm telling you, although the warfighter, the veteran, the person who's serving their country, they're the ones putting on the uniform and doing the job every day. They couldn't do it without the success of a great support system like you as a family. So to each and every one of you who is a part of a veteran family or veteran community, thank you so much. This day is for you. Y'all have a good one.
I walked through a county courthouse square. On a park bench, an old man was sitting there. I said, "Your old courthouse is kind of run down." He said, "No, it'll do for our little town." I said, "Your old flagpole is leaned a little bit, and that's a ragged old flag you got hanging on it." He said, "Have a seat." And I sat down. "Is this the first time you've been to our little town?" I said, "I think it is." He said, "I don't like to brag, but we're kind of proud of that ragged old flag. You see, we got a little hole in that flag there when Washington took it across the Delaware. And it got powder burned the night that Francis Scott Key sat watching it write and say, 'Can you see?' And it got a bad rip in New Orleans, Pakenham and Jackson tugging at its seam. And it almost fell at the Alamo beside the Texas flag, but she waved on, though. She got cut with a sword at Chancellorsville, and she got cut again at Shiloh Hill. There was Robert E. Lee, Beauregard, and Bragg, and the south wind blew hard on that ragged old flag. On Flanders Field in World War I, she got a big hole from a Bertha gun. She turned blood red in World War II. She hung limp and low a time or two. She was in Korea, Vietnam. She went where she was sent by her Uncle Sam. She waved from our ships upon the briny foam, and now they've about quit waving back here at home. In her own good land here, she's been abused. She's been burned, dishonored, denied, refused. And the government for which she stands is scandalized throughout the land. And she's getting threadbare and she's wearing thin, but she's in good shape for the shape she's in. She's been through the fire before, and I believe she can take a whole lot more. So we raise her up every morning, we take her down every night, we don't let her touch the ground, and we fold her up right. On second thought, I do like to brag, because I'm mighty proud of that ragged old flag.
Man, it does not get any better than that, man. I love it. Again, to all of you guys, veterans past and present, and especially if you're having that hankering of joining the military, I promise you, man, even with all the injuries and damage that I've got to my body, I'm going to tell you, it is not something I wouldn't give a single day back. I'm proud of my service, as well as all of you should be. And to my wife, her very generous message here, thank you so much. And Tammy, if I haven't told you today, I'll tell you, you're welcome for my service as well. All right, guys. So, hey, here we go, right? So let's get into the news, right? Because this is episode number 302, Veterans Day and news. So we've covered the Veterans Day. Let's get to the news. So, all right, look, man, if you thought the midterm election was bowling shoe ugly like I did, as I covered it on my last show on Wednesday, I think you ain't seen nothing yet. I mean, what's coming next in America? In American politics, really, it's going to make this past year look like a waltz through Candyland. I mean, with the congressional elections coming to a close, we still got a lot that we don't know. All eyes are going to turn to 2024, and I think especially coming on this Tuesday. So with Republicans, as it looks like, they're going to end up control the House and maybe the Senate by very slim margins. The GOP, they're finally going to be in a position of power that really that it can use against this current administration and congressional Democrats. And that's what I want to cover right there. Let's get to the news of this segment, The Breakdown. Okay, so you've heard how that you've heard my feelings this last show this past Wednesday, and I'm going to kind of expound on it a little bit because the midterm elections, that is really all that is in the news right now. So I'm thinking if House Minority Leader, as of right now, Kevin McCarthy, if his declarations earlier this year were sincere, that he wants to get back to some of the foundations of our country, then right on. Republicans are going to be in the offensive in a way that is sure to rattle the cages. You know, especially of the Democratic Party and their comrades in the activist media. Tammy says here the people should be afraid the presidential election is coming. I know it definitely causes a concern. Tammy says, I am. It's more unrest in my country. Regardless of who wins, I think it's going to be the case. But as of right now, we're looking at they're going to be launching this slew of investigations if the Republicans get their way. They're going to launch a slew of investigations designed to unearth as much political dirt as humanly possible, right? So again, everything that we got tired of with the Democrats and Donald Trump was in office, get ready because the Republicans are going to do it now that Joe Biden is in office. I mean, you got to figure, man, you got Hunter Biden investigation, you got the botched Afghanistan withdrawal that they called a success, the origins of COVID-19 pandemic that, you know, they've been calling for since the pandemic started. So you bet that's going to be an investigation. How about the politicization of the Justice Department and the FBI? Or maybe the White House's mishandling of the migrant crisis? All of these things are going to be fair game for Republicans to cause as much dust as they can. They've already been laying the groundwork for probes into most of these matters. And they've already told you as much. That's what they're going to do. So don't get surprised when you see the Republicans in party, in power. Don't be surprised if they don't do a whole lot, but investigate. Now, look, here's the reality. Even though they're going to do these investigations, and I think this is why I'm kind of, as much as I'm kind of curious to see, like, hey, I would love to see that happen because I think America deserves to know the truth. The end result is it's not going to result in any indictments or any such action. But I think what will happen is it's going to reveal issues that the Biden administration and the Democrats would probably rather those secrets remain hidden. Casey Starkey says, I'm sorry, but we need to investigate these treasonous bastards. And look, I agree. I believe that does need to happen. All of those things that I talked about, I think it is definitely, I think you're right, Casey. I think there does need to be investigations only if there is seriousness about holding people accountable. Why my argument is that it's probably not going to happen is because it hasn't happened in my history anyway, 43 years old. So I'm not real convinced that we're going to see anything major happen because, I mean, look, Hillary Clinton, So Hillary Clinton, her server where she had classified information on everything that she shouldn't have. The Department of Justice, the FBI come out and said, well, hey, look, yeah, she broke the law, but she didn't mean it. So we're not going to recommend charges. Benghazi, Susan Rice, even after everything was known in Benghazi, four Americans died and the Obama administration pushed that it was across the board a spontaneous demonstration from a video, even though all intelligence had debunked it. Susan Rice If you remember that Sunday tour, that right after 9/11, she took to the airwaves and said it was a spontaneous reaction to a video, knowing damn well it was a lie, continued to push it. There was an investigation, and what did we hear? 4 Americans died. What difference does it make? And I think that's kind of the issue, right? Because we never see it. We never see anything get done. Yeah, I remember her Hillary Clinton's server room got burned at her house. There's a whole lot of Epsteinisms going on here. And because we've never seen anything done, we're not going to see anything done. And if that's the case, if that's going to be the end result, if the Republicans don't come out and say, hey, this is our end game. And I think that's kind of the problem. Why Americans are so tired of all these political faux pas is because, and these investigations is because no one identifies an end game. We want to hold them accountable. Well, for what? They did something. I know they did. That's why we're going to do an investigation to see if we can find out what they did. That is not, well, first off, that's illegal as hell. You can't go on a fact finding mission. You have to be very specific in your warrants and very specific in your investigation. You just can't throw a bunch of subpoenas out there, throw shit at a wall and see what sticks and go, you know, I will go with that. That's not what's going to happen. If the Republicans come out and say, as Casey is saying, that, look, these issues need to be investigated. You know, we need to look at Hunter Biden and his business dealings over downrange. We need to be looking at the failure of the Afghanistan withdrawal. We need to be talking about the origins of COVID-19 and who profited and who benefited. Who knew what and when did they know it? And what did they do when they found out? You know, the Justice Department, if anybody has any faith in the Justice Department, much less the FBI. Now, look, here's the problem. The FBI, by all accounts, they are full of great agents. Every law enforcement agency is full of great agents, the great officers, great people serving their country. That leadership level, though, the higher they get, right? They get more out there. They're more corrupt as hell. So we should be finding out and we should be holding these leaders of the Justice Department, the FBI, we should be holding them accountable. As far as the White House mishandling of the border crisis, you know, all this whole garbage we've been hearing, ladies and gentlemen, about how the governors of Florida and Texas are busing migrants to these places, and it's a horrible thing to see the realization that the government, the federal government, the Biden administration has been doing that for months, long before the first bus left Texas or Florida. Where was the outrage then? The point that I'm making here, if I haven't beat a dead horse into the ground enough, what's good for the goose is also good for the goose, right? Nothing is going to change. Nothing is going to happen. This is all political posturing, and get ready because we're going to see a lot of it. Because I don't really believe there's going to be a lot of indictments or any actions, but it's going to show some dirt that the Biden administration Democrats would rather have kept under the dirt. You know, the whole Democratic, the House Select Committee of January 6th, you can bet if the Republicans went take over the House, that's going to be dissolved immediately, which means here come the conspiracy theorists that these politicians now, the Republicans, are trying to hide the truth from America. Well, the truth is already out there. Everybody who knows how to read and has two functioning brain cells that can make friction, they know what the issue is. One thing we haven't been finding out, I think we need to keep the January 6th committee, but we need to shift the investigation a little bit. Let's find out what the Capitol Police, let's find out who was in charge of, and even Muriel Bowser, I think that's who it is in D.C., the mayor there. Let's find out if they had any, let's find out why they turned down getting National Guard there for January 6th. Let's find that out. Let's find out, you know, who refused additional security, who didn't bring in more people because they knew there was going to be a protest. Every other time they have security, this time they didn't. And what that means is, by doing this, the left wing's no longer going to have the will to have the riots of the U.S. Capitol to use as a cudgel against the right. Now, indeed, it's going to be the conservatives who are going to be on the offensive. You can bet it's going to happen. And typically, the Republican Party, they typically just throw mud, but they accept defeat very easily. They want to be seen as the gentleman's class of the political landscape. But what happens, because they very rarely will go on the offensive, they very rarely get anything done. So people who are banking that Republicans are going to do something, and look, I'm saying this not because I want it to happen. I'm saying this because I would love to see some follow through. Finally, but I haven't seen it really since I've been following politics since 2000, about the time I become a young adult. And, of course, what we're going to hear is the same thing we've been hearing the past 2 years, that Democrats are going to complain about the investigations regardless of whether they reveal any damning information or not. They're going to accuse Republicans of all type of malfeasance, and the media activists in the Fourth Estate, they're glad they're going to parrot their talking points, and they're going to run and cover for their close friends and allies like they have been doing. We can expect big tech companies to censor information accordingly. And chances are they're likely going to crack down on those sharing the reports that ultimately come from the GOP's investigations. Elon Musk's Twitter might be the only major platform where it's safe, but for those of you who are Twitter and you want that coveted blue check mark for whatever reason, that's going to be a subscription base. So you bet most of those are going to fall off as well. But I think we'd be remiss if we forgot about the FBI's investigation into the former president and the Justice Department targeting his associates. These have been political attacks. Look, I believe that he's an asshole, but you got to call it political when you see it. You know, these agencies, they magically, if you paid attention, they went very silent on their investigations over the past few months because taking any overt action, it would come off as they're trying to influence the outcomes of the midterm elections. They did their job over the summer. But now that the races are wrapping up, we can truly expect to see them launch the full court offense, the full court press against everything Trump, to include their voters. I really don't think it'd be shocking to see a series of indictments handed down against the former president and those in his inner circle, because they don't want him to run. And quite frankly, I don't think really anybody wants him to run except him and his inner circle. But the FBI, they know that such a move is actually going to further tear this nation apart. But they don't care if it means they can prevent the orange man bad from seeking another term in the White House. But if and when the indictments are announced, the left is going to celebrate, of course. They're going to claim that this is proof positive that Trump is the American version of Hitler and that he should go to prison. He colluded with the Russians no matter what the FBI's previous investigation showed. Folks on the right, they're going to see it as yet another way that the left is trying to weaponize the federal government against their political opponents. Is these two eventualities, they don't even take into consideration anything else that might come up over the next couple years as both sides, they fight to determine who's going to occupy the Oval Office in 24. I mean, in this political climate, pretty much anything can and will happen. And as much as I hate to say it, America, I really believe, is in for a very tumultuous next few years. Now, while I am optimistic about the future, I believe it's going to get worse before it even gets better. And here's what I mean, right? I talked about it briefly on my show Wednesday, but last night, with the midterm races still yet to be called in a lot of key states, that's going to determine the balance of power in Congress, Donald Trump did it again, man. He issued a statement targeting Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Why? You know, his lengthy statement, if you got a chance to read it today, if you haven't had a chance, go on Twitter, go to his, it's not hard to find his statement on Ron DeSantis, but it began by using Ron DeSantis' new nickname that only Trump has given him, DeSanctimonious, Ron DeSanctimonious. And he called him an average Republican governor with great public relations who has the advantage of sunshine. But the old Donald, he also claimed, quote, people from badly run states up north would go to Florida no matter who the governor is, just like I did. What is the point? Because as it seems right now, this whole beef between Trump and DeSantis, it's all one-sided. Donald Trump is attacking the person that he knows is going to mop the floor with him come the primaries. But he continued his attack on DeSantis by claiming that the governor's first campaign had completely fallen apart. He's taking credit. He said, if I endorse them, then their success is all of mine. Not theirs, but all of mine. But if they fail, their failure is all of theirs. He claimed that DeSantis, his first campaign fell apart before he stepped in to endorse him and hold rallies on his behalf. And Donald Trump says that he fixed DeSantis' campaign while stopping the election from being stolen. Now, his accusatory statement, it continued. He said, quote, Ron DeSanctimonious is playing games by answering questions about a Trump 24 run, saying that he was focused on his now wildly successful gubernatorial race leading governor. When they asked him, Governor DeSantis, are you going to run for president? He said, look, man, I'm just worried about my state. You know, whatever happens in 24 happens 24, but I'm just worried about my state. And according to Donald Trump in his statement, he said that in terms of loyalty and class, that's not the right answer. Like he is truly the Don, right? When they ask if he's going to run for president, he says, hey, man, I'm just worried about this win, and I'm worried about my country, or I'm worried about my state because we got a hurricane hitting our state right now. That's all I'm worried about. Donald Trump's, his reply was, in terms of loyalty and class, that's not the right answer. Instead of saying no, because Donald Trump's going to run and I'm going to stay out of it because Donald Trump's our best thing ever for America. Anybody that doesn't line up and kiss the shoes, that doesn't kiss the ring of Teflon Don, he has hate for him. And while it's on par with his usual rhetoric that's normally used against centrists, you know, squishy Republicans and not red state conservatives, his attack on Ron DeSantis, it's drawn a lot of criticisms from Republicans and conservatives for attacking him, let alone while the governor, he's responding again to Hurricane Nicole that's hitting all across the Sunshine State. I think it's time that someone whisper in Donald Trump's ear, read the room and realize that firing a gun inside the tent, especially against the man known by a lot in GOP circles as America's governor, it's not the move that you want to make in the wake of a midterm cycle, which DeSantis' victory was really the only few bright spots in the GOP's performance on Tuesday night. But if his escalating statements and posts on True Social are any indication at all, it seems to be that the war path that Donald Trump's now on, it doesn't look like those who previously backed him, they want to be along for the ride. Everyone is distancing themselves from Donald Trump. I said it in my show Wednesday. He's political kryptonite. But like Donald Trump, Joe Biden is equally as untouchable no matter what kind of ridiculous stuff he says. Now, maybe that's a debatable point. But while we all talk about how Donald Trump is Teflon regarding the many attempts to derail his political career, Donald Trump, as of right now, he's either the greatest evil mastermind on the planet because he's gotten away with every crime that he's allegedly committed, or maybe he's right, it was a political witch hunt. But the Democrats, they've so far they've tried to impeach him twice. He failed, and they failed. Donald Trump has run for office twice. Well, three times, I think, but he actually two serious bids for the president, and he lost a popular vote twice. You know, there's a fury, or there's a flurry of state-based investigations against Donald Trump right now, which have really yielded nothing against him. Now, granted, Donald Trump is now self-destructing the post-22 elections, which means that Joe Biden, and he's just really, yeah, all he has to do is sit back like he always has and just watch the circus from on high. The self-implosion of Trump has been coupled with the Republicans' party, their failure to clinch a resounding victory in this year's elections, and it points to a horrific truth about Joe Biden. Like Donald Trump, he either must be the luckiest man in politics, or there's a lot of lying going on. You know, Tammy says in the chat, she says, whether you love or hate Donald Trump, he is dangerous for our country. He has a way of working people up on both sides, all sides really. And I agree. I mean, I for people that say they love their country, to vote for Joe Biden or Donald Trump, that's not a good way to show it. Because right now, if you think about it, man, Joe Biden, he's a two-time presidential loser. Voters didn't want him in 1988 when his run ended prematurely after a plagiarism scandal. He was plagiarizing speeches. In 2008, it was really the Hillary and the Barack Obama show. Biden barely cleared the Iowa caucuses. He got flushed out pretty quick, but hey, he got a good vice presidential run out of it. But if you flash forward to 2020, Joe Biden looked like he was cooked by a younger and more vibrant candidate field, which was quickly exposed as being a mile wide. I think they had, 20 candidates running for president, but it was only an inch deep, right? And they still couldn't manage to get across that shit creek because Biden was the best out of all of them. I mean, he was methodical. He was patient. And what he did well. He waited for each supposed big name to drop out, and that's exactly what happened. He survived the primary, but he looked at facing a vivacious President Trump, who had a booming economy behind him at the time. Then there was a respiratory virus that originated in Wuhan, China, that we can't investigate or talk about, and it created a global pandemic that forced everyone into lockdown, and the economy spiraled rapidly into a recession, and Teflon Don got the credit. The COVID era begun, with Biden doing most of his campaigning from the basement. Remember, if you have a hard time figuring out if you're me or Trump, then you ain't black. That come from his basement. I mean, when the debate began, Joe Biden, all he had to do was repeat his playbook from his primaries by letting his opponents make the mistakes, and Donald Trump did exactly that. The former president, he was overly aggressive, he was bombastic, and he was real horse's ass in his debates, which probably ended up pushing away more independent voters. Joe Biden won the election, though there was some funny business, which I won't relitigate, but you know exactly what I'm referencing when I talked earlier about the investigations in the House. But in the White House, you can see why voters really didn't pick Biden to go far in the primaries. He's unqualified to be our president. He's more than a half a step back regarding his mental facilities. He's not respected. He's not sporific. He's egregiously uncharismatic. He's a gaffe machine. You know, I remember hearing everybody talk about how bad George W. Bush was at public speaking, but I'm hearing crickets, right, from the liberal left on what's going on with their candidate as of right now. I mean, there's a reason that Joe Biden's approvals are in the 30s and 40s. Everybody sees him as an incompetent dolt. I mean, there's not a single crisis that he's resolved or he's managed to improve just a little bit. And again, 409-245-9753 is the number. I would love to hear from a Biden supporter who would be willing to help me understand. Maybe you can tell me where I'm wrong and, you know, I could receive an education. But the thing is, we're facing a crime spike and high inflation that are in the throes of a recession. It is happening right now, and it's only going to get worse this winter. But because if Republicans take the House and the Senate, guess who's going to get the credit, even though they're not the ones who set it up? And still, Joe Biden could walk away with virtually a split chamber in the House right now. And the Republican Party, they never had a better climate for generating a red wave. And I think that's the frustration from Tuesday, is they absolutely blew it. Joe Biden was virtually ordered to stay away from all vulnerable Democrats in their races because they knew he was toxic, and he obliged, and his party still maintained control of the Senate as of right now. The best the GOP could do now is to have a 3-5 seat majority in the House, maybe a 1 seat majority in the Senate. But you know, Joe, he's faced near impossible headwinds that a sitting president's party could survive in a midterm election, and yet he did, considering how bad our country's been doing. COVID couldn't kill his presidential chances, and his unpopular agenda and gross ineptitude at carrying out the duties of the office of the presidency, that couldn't convince voters to vote Republican, you know, but by and large, in this past election. Everyone was bracing for a Democrat beatdown to be used to force Joe Biden to not run for a second term. Now, that reason, it's been neutralized. These occurrences are due to Joe Biden's political skills. Those are absent. And it must be plain luck, a lengthy, ungodly string of good fortune to all of our horror. But what we are seeing is, despite that red wave that's been coming, you know, turned out to be more like a red trickle or a red tinkle, we'll call it, the Democrats, they don't like their chances. We're seeing it right now, the party of the Democratic Party. So we're talking, the concern is there's a concern that the Republican Party is going to implode between the DeSantis voters and the Trump voters. Well, I think the same thing is going to happen in the Democratic Party, with an implosion between people who want Joe Biden to run and people who don't. But as of right now, they don't like their chances of Joe Biden keeping the executive branch. The only way that he will do so is if he ends up running against Donald Trump. And again, that'll be another election where, well, we'll see how that goes if it gets there, but I don't think it will. But according to Fox News, I read the report this morning, there's a group that's called Don't Run Joe. And they've been generating momentum just a couple days out of the midterms to get the Democratic Party to ditch the idea that Biden is our lead ticket for the next election. On their website, it says that, quote, it's clear that Joe Biden should not be the party's presidential nominee in 24. And this is a grassroots organization called Roots Action. They said in their press release Wednesday, and they announced their Don't Run Joe campaign. Now, the campaign's intent is to point to Biden's unfavorability as the perceived risk of running a presidential candidate that has held one of the lowest approval ratings in the United States history against a momentous Republican Party. The Don't Run Joe campaign said that renominating Joe Biden would be a tragic mistake. This is coming from a Democratic Party that renominating Biden would be a tragic mistake. And it added that the president is not his party's king. He has no automatic right to renomination. Joe Biden should not seek it. If he does, we will fight. He will have a fight on his hands. We cannot risk losing the 2024 election. He shouldn't gamble, or we should not gamble on Joe Biden's low approval rating. The campaign will say in its digital advertisements. Now, so the grassroots action, or the roots action, they haven't put anybody favorable that they think that could be their Democratic nominee. And as of right now, I don't think the Democrats really think that there's anybody better than Joe, and that's kind of where the problem is. But they could, you know, I might be wrong. His approval ratings, they've been in the dumps for so long that it's hard to even think that he had a positive approval rating. And it shows no signs of rising back to decent levels by most political standards at this point in his career. Last August, Joe Biden's approval was at 38%. His disapproval was at 58%. Now, while this lack of a red wave, it may see his approval ratings rise just a little bit. I want you to rest assured that it's going to go back down. It's going to sink further as his policies, they continue to devastate Americans and their wallets, their schools, and their streets. But before you think that Roots Action is attempting to restore any sanity to the White House, don't think that they're allies because they're saying what we're saying. According to the organization, their anger at Biden's it solely revolves around his administration's failure to do more help to fight climate change. They're mad because he didn't do more to protect voting rights and to relieve student debt, which, funny enough, this great big thing, right, the student debt relief, now there's a judge who said that is unconstitutional. So now this whole idea of student debt relief, it was all what we always knew it was. It was all for votes. We said it on my show before. It was a move for votes. And now that the midterm elections have been done, now a judge is saying, yeah, it's unconstitutional. Where was he Monday? Where was he any other time? But judging by his disapproval rating, this group isn't alone in really wanting Biden gone, but really not for the same reasons. And time's going to tell just how far the push to get Biden out of this running will go, even if it'll be successful. I'm still going to stand by my predictions as far as what's going to happen if the Republicans take the House and the Senate, but we'll see. But if both the left, the right, and the radical left want him gone, the chances of it succeeding, they're very high. I mean, it's been my argument that if you love your country, there is no way that you'd be willing to reelect Joe Biden or reelect Donald Trump or put your faith in the current political leadership of Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Kevin McCarthy or even Mitch McConnell. We all deserve better, and it's time that we start forcing their hand by calling our congressmen and demanding better. If you want better, it might be time to go make it happen. And that right there is the breakdown. Casey Starkey writes in the chat that Biden is going to be in a nursing home in a few years unless they giving him some experimental dementia drug. We'll have to talk online about that one, Casey. You know what? No, I don't hide anything from you guys. Do I think Joe Biden's going to be in a nursing home in a couple years? As far as him ever being in a nursing home, no. But I know the point you're making, Casey, and which means he's going to go back to recluse living in his basement, and Jill's going to be doing tours talking about how awesome it was to be the first lady and the second lady in one lifetime. But I don't see Joe Biden finishing his term. I really don't. They may do it out of pure desperation because, remember, Kamala Harris is on deck. And everybody's going to be just as concerned as they was back when Dan Quayle was on deck for Herbert Walker Bush. They're willing to accept shitty so they don't get shitty, shitty, shitty. So I don't know. I tend to lean toward that Biden will not finish his term because they really want to really get in that first female president. And especially that first female president as a black president, I think it's really... that might be the motivation behind it. But guys, I'm going to take a quick break. Tammy says the White House is the nursing home. Man, I agree. Guys, I'm going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to get back before we jump into our final segment. I want to jump in and I want to cover some of the crazy news that's happened in this week that we really, really should be on the main stage, but for some reason, mainstream media is not covering it. Guys, stick around.
Budweiser presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Nudist Colony Activity Coordinator.
Mr. Nudist Colony Activity Coordinator.
Wearing nothing but a whistle and a clipboard, you're living the real American dream. Getting paid to think up fun things to do naked.
Running free.
Sure, there's danger. Vinyl chairs, sunburns, chafage, and lawn darts completely out of the question.
Watch out now.
Your keen instincts tell you to stick to activities that involve lots of bouncing and jiggling. And if that doesn't work, who cares? You're all naked.
It's your birthday.
So this butt's for you, nudie boy. We all know when the going gets tough, the tough get naked.
The nudist calling activity coordinator.
All right, kids, so here we go. Let's get to some of the strangest news this week that I don't know if you've seen it in the news, but I've only seen it on Fox News, but nowhere else. All right, so just when I thought it was safe to go outside, I started reading the news. And I found some of the current news stories that's been trending this week. And they typically only found at the local level is what I was looking for. Some of them caught my attention. The times, man, they are changing. I mean, there's been a lot of interesting stories coming out of this midterm elections as we've been covering since Wednesday. But this one's gaining traction that we can file in the what the hell are you thinking part of the legislation. And so, again, I pulled this story from Fox News, and I've been reading it from other news outlets, and it turns out to be very true. So, apparently, Montana voters have rejected this Born Alive Infant Protection Act, and it would have required medical professionals to perform life-saving medical care on infants who survived abortions or were born prematurely. I'm going to say that again because that's hard to say. Montana voters rejected a Born Alive Infant Protection Act that would have required medical professionals to perform life-saving medical care on infants who survived abortions or were born prematurely. How are you against that? I mean, this pro-life measure wouldn't have prevented Montana residents from ever receiving an abortion, but it would have required that, quote, medical care be provided to infants born alive as a result of a natural or induced labor, a failed abortion, or a cesarean section. So on Election Day, this past Tuesday, Montana voters, they were given the option to affirm or deny legislation referendum 131 being signed into law. Now, the measure, it failed by around 20,000 votes, with 52.6% voting against it and 47.4% voting in favor of its passage at the time the Associated Press called the race. So this resolution, Legislative Referendum 131, it's a referendum for the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, and again, it would require doctors to provide resuscitative care to infants born at any stage in development or face penalties. Now, the text of the bill to put LR 131 on the ballot, it says that it pertains to infants delivered, quote, at any stage of development by natural or induced labor, cesarean section, induced abortion, or any other method. And the bill defines born alive as an infant that breathes, has a beating heart, or has definite movement of involuntary muscles. And it says that physicians and other staff who don't provide that life-sustaining treatment to newborns could face felony charges punishable by up to 20 years in prison and a $50,000 fine. Okay. So proponents, and here's the arguments on both sides, and I'll let you make up your mind, but proponents of the act, they say that it's morally necessary to protect an innocent life. I tend to agree with that. But opponents, they say that it gives the state too much power to decide what's medically reasonable, which could end up harming families suffering pregnancy complications. I would have appreciated a further explanation of that. And I think I understand, if they're talking about a child who is on their way out, as I understand it, if they're talking about a child who would not survive without medicine, without machines doing the breathing or them feeding and everything else, then that's going to get too costly and it's going to hurt families. So if residents voted yes, the referendum would have enacted a law guaranteeing that any infant that's born alive at any stage in the pregnancy protections as a legal person, and it would impose the criminal penalties on any healthcare worker that doesn't provide adequate medical care to these babies. Now, the Montana law as it stands right now, the Montana law currently protects against infanticide. So what is this bill, right? If this bill was designed to prevent infanticide, then what is this? Because what loophole does this bill bring in that the current Montana law doesn't? And the fact that individuals can face penalties if, the law states, the person purposefully, knowingly, or negligently causes the death of a premature infant born alive if the infant is viable, which means if this child has a likelihood of surviving and they don't provide care, then they should be put in jail. I think, you know, me personally, I'm having a hard time understanding how you can be against that. But in 2002, there was a federal law that granted infants that were born alive the same rights as persons, but it didn't mandate care or include penalties. This, I think, was designed to close that loophole. Now, 18 states since 2002, they passed laws similar to what's on the ballot in Montana requiring physicians to provide care or face criminal penalties. Now, Republican Matt Reiger from Kalispell, he is the one who actually introduced the Born Alive bill, which passed along party lines during the 21 legislative season, and legislators then voted to put it on the November ballot as a statewide referendum. So, Tammy, you know what? I see your comment here, and I want to come back to it for everybody that's not on YouTube and can't see it, but here's the debate as it stands right now from the science. So there's a CDC data of infant deaths over a 12-year period. They show that there's 143 live births following an induced abortion. In most cases involved fetal anomalies or material complications, and all, nearly 96% of those 143 births after an abortion, they survived less than a day. Now, there was a doctor who gave testimony. He's an OBGYN who guides women through high-risk pregnancies, and he says that the premise of 131 is not based on the reality of how healthcare is provided. He says who the bill will really impact is families suffering pregnancy complications. He says, quote, the clinical situations where we're dealing with an infant born alive is the setting of a rapid pre-viable preterm birth, or in the setting of these lethal fetal anomalies where we know interventions are not going to have a change in the outcome. Now, he spoke at an event, and in this event that was organized by the opposition group called Compassion for Montana Families. This doctor said that if the referendum passes, physicians are going to be forced to make decisions out of fear of prison time and fines rather than following the family's wishes or how they want to spend the final moments with their infant. He said that 131 is going to force physicians to attempt to place a breathing tube in a baby whose lungs have not yet developed or is so small that the tube cannot fit. Well, okay. He goes on to write that who's going to be the ones deciding what the reasonable care is? Is it going to be the state attorney general who's going to potentially look into cases? Because anybody can file a complaint against a physician or providers who are involved in some of these very tragic circumstances. Well, the thing is, the bill is specifically talking about viability. So I think his argument there is a little moot. But Rep. Reiger said that the guy who introduced the legislation said the opposition is disingenuous, saying the referendum would require doctors to take a terminally ill infant from its family and try to resuscitate it. He points to language on the ballot that reads, quote, a healthcare provider shall take medically appropriate and reasonable actions to preserve the life and health of an infant born alive. He said to me, it just defies common sense. I mean, of what is medically appropriate and reasonable if you're going to try to revive a terminally ill baby, that is not medically reasonable. That seems pretty straightforward. End quote. Now look, I'm going to let you make your own conclusions about who's right on this argument. But Tammy has a good point. She says, they really need to decide how they want it. So much for life starting when they take their first breath. You know, the best I can tell, all this bill would have done is force doctors to give care to a living human baby, including if they're born after a live abortion. You know, if the police are just as required to give medical care to people who are just now trying to kill them, if society demands that convicted killers who are undergoing lethal injection must be done so in a humane manner, then how in the world can that same society still look at this bill in Montana and argue that we really shouldn't be giving milk or health care to a newborn baby? Like Tammy says, man, for all the abortion activists who make the argument that it isn't a baby until it takes its first breath before they have rights, what is your argument now? Guys, I'm going to take my last break. We'll come back at you with one final thing with the craziest story I could find all week.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Gangster Rapper Posse Member.
Mr. Gangster Rapper Posse Member.
Behind every great man, there is a woman. And behind that woman, 14 guys with sideways baseball caps and really baggy pants.
Those pants are giant.
What do you do when you have no talent whatsoever? Attach yourself to someone who does.
But it's a bash, it's a...
Gold tooth, check. Giant gold medallion, check. Royalties from record sales, no check.
Help a brother out.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Baron of the Brown Nose. Then crack open another 13 for the rest of the crew.
Mr. Gangster Rapper Posse Member.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
All right, so I want to get to this story because it's absolutely crazy. Man, I never thought that I'd be reading a story like this for our final show of the week. So, you know what? As much as the suspenseful music is comic, I gotta give you my focus on this one because this is hard to read, right? So, an iconic military or American institution, it has finally declared another champion. And this one is especially historic. The Miss Greater Derry Scholarship Pageant, as the site points out, is a preliminary event to the Miss New Hampshire and Miss America pageant. Seems pretty straightforward. But as reported, and if you're anywhere near a screen, I recommend you look at this that I'm fixing to show you. As reported by South Carolina's WPDE, the pageant, it welcomed a unique contestant this year. The unique contestant in this Miss Greater Derry Scholarship pageant, this beauty pageant, is a 19-year-old biological male named Brian Wynn. Brian went head-to-head with females in the areas of, per Miss Greater Derry's website, scholastic aptitude, talent, character, community service, and poise. Maybe they should bring in a bigger dick contest and he's going to be a shoe-in every time to win. But in the end, the entrants with the uteruses, they were no match for the prostate-possessing person. We'll call them that. And here's your winner. Mr., Ms., however you want to put it, Brianne Wynn. On Instagram, Brian wrote of the honor. And in it, he writes, quote, right here it is on the screen, of the 100-year history of Miss America, I have officially become the first transgender title holder within the Miss America organization. He says that no words can describe the feeling of having the opportunity to serve my community and represent my community for the very first time at the Miss New Hampshire. I'm so honored and so honored to be crowned your new Miss Greater Derry 23, and I am thrilled to show you all what I have up my sleeves. This will be an amazing year. Well, Brianne Wynn, we just show us what you got up your sleeve, just not up your dress, because we're just not that interested. And I think it's already a historic year when we're seeing a society where, you know, don't, if I'm not mistaken, Tu Wong Fu, you know, that's a silly ass movie, Patrick Swayze, John Leguizamo and Wesley Snipes. if I'm not mistaken, there's already a contest out there where they can identify who's the prettier. But again, here we are as a society. We're saying that in a female's in a female woman qualifying pageant for scholastic aptitude, talent, character, community service, and poise, in those categories that are judged for females, you're telling me that a male beat them all. I'm just wondering, where are our feminists? And the reason why this is so strange to me is, as I just said, the Miss Greater Dairy contest, it feeds into Miss America. I mean, wait, might the national pageant someday see a biologically male queen? I mean, I think if our current trajectory continues, it seems virtually guaranteed. And really, I think we can only woke so. But you know, in the words of the great late Paul Harvey, it's in times like these that it helps to recall that there have always been times like these. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for me. Thank you so much for tuning in to our show that seeks not only to provide the middle ground analysis, but to remain consistent with the inconvenient truth that so many people refuse to see. We are a loony-ass society. I don't know how it is in these other countries, but I'm going to probably lean forward and say the rest of these countries who are watching us, they're laughing at us. Because we're a joke in every turn. We're trying to be woke. And woke doesn't win wars. Woke doesn't keep freedom. Woke doesn't keep process and progress going. Woke is just the opposite. It hamstrings everything that we're doing as a country. It hamstrings us, and we really should be taking it more seriously as far as what we're allowing to pass as a new norm. So until next time, friends, thank you for your service and your patriotism to this country. Without our men and women in uniform, our veteran community, and great Americans like yourself, this country would be a very different place. We're the only ones who stand between freedom and chaos. And as always, friends, don't let your dog tag stay on the dirt. Stay on your feet and continue to fight that good fight against everything that's wrong. If you love your freedom, today is the day to do it, to thank a veteran. If you love your peace, thank a police officer. If you see a first responder, give them a high-five handshake. Tell them, job well done. Guys, get off social media, get off the news, and spend time with the ones who matter most, because tomorrow is not guaranteed. Take advantage of every minute you have today. Spend this weekend with the ones you love. For those of you out deer hunting, man, good luck to you. I hope you're successful. To my veterans out there, have a happy and safe rest of your Veterans Day. And each and every one of you, thank you for catching me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time right here. So until next time, friends, as long as the Lord is willing and the creeks don't rise, we'll see you again. My name's Philip Blackman, and I'm out of here.